Hello, my name is Dario Balca, student coordinator for the Peter A. Allard School of Law History Project. Before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge that UBC's Vancouver Point Grey campus is situated on the traditional, ancestral, unceded territory of the Musqueam people. For those listening to this recording outside this area, I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners and caretakers of those lands. It's August 26th, 2020, and I'm joined today by Catherine Chow, who's the Vice President Legal and General Counsel at Keg Restaurants Limited. Catherine earned an LLM from the Allard School of Law in 2007. She says it's her love of the law and the desire to give back to the legal community that have kept her involved with the law school as an instructor. Catherine, thank you so much for joining me today.
Lovely to be here. Thank you.
I guess we should start from the beginning of your journey. And I wonder if you can tell me a bit about what inspired you to go to law school and pursue a career in that field.
Well, I knew I wanted to be a lawyer ever since I was a young child. I wanted to help the underdog at the playground, and maybe perhaps being an immigrant woman of color, I wanted to help the disadvantaged, and which I felt wasn't myself at the time, but also could see the plight of others. And as I learned more about law, and owing to my sister also becoming a lawyer, I grew interested in the ways in which laws impact social policies and the very nuances in the ways in which we live and behave. And particularly for more vulnerable populations, I felt like there was a significant tie between law and how poverty and disadvantages worked in the world. So I was always very curious about that. And, you know, being a lawyer had all that cachet back in the day of, you know, all the TV shows had great courtroom dramas. And so it seemed really interesting to me.
Yeah. So you've been working in-house at the Keg and have been doing so for a while now, and we'll talk about some of that in a minute, but can you tell me a bit about some of the work you did before joining the Keg?
Right. Most recently before the Keg, which is almost 14, 15 years ago now, I worked at a national downtown firm in Vancouver and also in Calgary in private practice. After my articles at Burnett Duckworth in Calgary, I began a commercial litigation and expropriation law practice at a boutique firm called Rooney Prentice. And there I kind of identified myself as a dirt lawyer in my early career. I was defending and prosecuting land expropriations. I worked for major land development here in Vancouver. It's interesting to drive around and see some of the subdivisions and the towers that I worked on. And I did real estate deals, essentially, you know, residential, some commercial, and I did a lot of national commercial leasing transactions. So I enjoyed that part in private practice before I joined the Keg.
Was there a particular reason that you decided to move in-house?
Well, there's a bit of a long story here, so bear with me. I think, you know, decisions to change your career are often complex, and they often, for me, I'm a bit of a planner, but the story starts way back in Alberta, where our bar calls are individual applications where you're presented by your principal in front of a judge in open court for admission to the Law Society. And my sister Winnie, who acted as a co-principal to me, she could make oral submissions as to my suitability. So the submissions often include a rote recitation of your accomplishments and your credentials. But there's always room in those oral submissions for additive remarks, and it usually included a roast of the articling candidate during their articling year, some of their foibles perhaps. But during my bar call, my sister submitted into evidence a journal, a diary scrapbook of sorts that I kept when I was 13, and she read it aloud. And the diary was a life plan I'd mapped out for myself. I had planned to go to university for my first degree to be completed by age 22. I was going to graduate law school at 25, get called to the bar, get married by 28, have two kids, a boy and a girl. I was going to name them Andrew and Andrea, just for convenience. Luckily, I didn't. And then I would do a graduate degree in law, and I would work as an in-house lawyer eventually. So I had mapped this out, and I would say that it wasn't what prompted me to move in-house, but I think that it was always in the back of my mind. So I, you know, worked through my plan. I got my first degree. I graduated law school, got married at 30. A little late, but and I had my two kids, a boy and a girl. I got an LLM at UBC, and now I work in-house. But while the path was sort of laid out by these arbitrary milestones at 13, the path was very varied, and there were many ups and downs in that course. But it's something I've always wanted to do, and I think in part it was very practically motivated for me to go in-house. from what I learned about private practice at, in law and its hostile hours and its adverse culture to motherhood, I think I wanted to have a work-life balance, as it was called then, or work-life integration, or whatever you call it now. But I wanted an ability to move beyond the mere legal role of providing a service to a business role where I could have an impact enterprise-wide and feel part of a team and in a family.
So you've really had this plan for a long time. I mean, I talked to a lot of people who ended up where they ended up just, you know, I got a phone call one day and that was that. And there was no real plan there. So it's interesting to see someone who knew since they were 13 which way they wanted to go.
Yeah, like I said, it was a varied path. And I think how I got to the Kagan House was a bit surreptitious. You know, what happened was, and I'll tell you the story, I was working at fairly a good vintage of being called to the bar at that time. And the Keg needed someone to notarize a lease. And that would have been typically, you know, sloughed off to an articling student or a junior associate. But I said, oh, I'll do it. Like, I had no hierarchy of work, I suppose. And I said, I'll go do it. And I ended up doing it on a day off that I had. And I met the CFO and the CEO that day to notarize a lease. And I notarized the heck out of that. I did such a great job that they thought that I would have a good fit for their in-house role. And I think in part it was because I took that notarization seriously, that I didn't, you know, look at any task, any legal task below anybody that wasn't, you know, suitable. And when you do a good job of any task, I think people see that. And so that's how I got introduced to the Keg and how I became in-house counsel and general counsel from notarizing a lease. So I think that, like I said, the varied path of a plan doesn't come because you strive for it. It comes because you're ready for it.
I was reading it a bit about your role with the Keg, and it seems like your portfolio covers a really broad range of legal matters. Could you tell me in your own words, or could you describe the kind of work you do now and maybe what some of the highlights have been for you in the 14 years that you've been there?
Right. Well, the role of general counsel is really general. You know, we have 100 plus locations, restaurant locations in Canada and the US. And so as general counsel, I direct the company's litigation in all those locations. For example, I advise and negotiate a variety of commercial arrangements that impact the restaurants. So commercial leases, business acquisitions, franchising, credit facilities and supply agreements. I also direct the risk management, and I am responsible for the insurance procurement and the claims. From a compliance standpoint as in-house counsel, I protect the company's trademarks and I assist with our securities regulations disclosure requirements. Part of our company has a publicly traded arm, the Keg Royalties Income Fund. So that adds a different dimension to our company as well. And then obviously working with an extensive team of external counsel in multiple jurisdictions, coast to coast, so to speak, trying to keep abreast of the broad variety of changes in all those areas of law. And I think the benefit of having a broad role and being a general practitioner, in a sense, in a company, is that I get to integrate the impacts of business decisions or legal outcomes through various business units, which means like an integrated approach leads to more probable successful outcomes. Each of the business units, because I have a hand in all in lots of pies, so to speak, I'm able to sort of convey information and convey the information in a way that's useful to the business units. So I really enjoy that part of my job as in-house counsel, which means my day-to-day, I'm on the phone a lot. I'm communicating with a lot of people on a lot of stakeholders, translating legal jargon into actionable tasks and giving customized legal advice to business units rather than as a private practitioner. I think you have more of a legal obligation to give advice in a certain manner. As in-house counsel, my obligation is to give advice that works, that can translate into the business units. So I really enjoy that part of being general counsel. And when I look back at the almost 15 years at the Keg, you know, there's so many highlights. So, you know, I did a major US jury trial for a commercial litigation matter, which is very unusual. I was able to introduce some, you know, modernized business practices for our risk management and insurance program. But I think if I think of the highlights of the keg, I'm really most proud of being a role model to our company and our staff, showing leadership as a racialized woman, leading slowly to a cultural shift in a company. I think that's really been important and a highlight for me. And modernizing, showing a representative workforce. Like, I think those elements come together just from me doing that work as in-house counsel. Mm-hmm. Highlights, there are going to be so many, I think, and I can't not speak about COVID and ushering the company through the pandemic and ushering the company through a real cultural shift about people of color at this time of my career.
You've kind of mentioned that a couple times now in terms of being a person of color in the legal profession. Could you elaborate a little bit on what you think some of the challenges have been and some of the changes that you've seen over the course of your career?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the challenges for people of color persist. I think that there are lots of advances we've made. For example, I'm general counsel now, which I think is an advancement that we see people of color in senior management executive roles. But I also think the challenges exist at the basic level within law schools. What I see is important change, and I think, is that the mentorship for young lawyers, that those opportunities aren't as available for racialized minorities or students, or as they were typically more available for a mainstream student body, I guess. I'm trying to be careful because I think things are changing, but I think things persist. Mm-hmm. And I think the things that persist, people defend with a lot of vigor, and I'm not sure it's necessary. But I think the change I see is that what we need is young people looking forward, having the right mentors to give them the legal skills to practice law. The diversity of the practices of law require a skill set where we abide by our professional ethics, where we have an idea of where our careers can contribute to a profession. And there's something quite special about being a lawyer, being in a self-regulated profession. And I think those lessons of how to be a lawyer and what practice means are taught through mentorship relationships. And I think students of color don't get those opportunities in the same way. So I think those are the challenges. I think I was very lucky and I was very privileged being, a light-skinned woman of color. I think that afforded me the opportunity for some amazing mentorship in very early on in my career. And I think that's where, if you lack that opportunity, the pitfalls of a challenging profession come into play. So we have professional ethics breaches, we have competency issues. I think we see that more in lawyers who drop out of the practice. And I think those tend to be women, those tend to be people of color, or they tend to, practice in non-legal ways, sort of taking other roles outside of the profession of law. And it's a loss, because I think when you've gone through law school and you have something to contribute and you're able to help a younger generation come up, I think it's a loss when we lose people of color, we lose women out of the profession. That was a very roundabout answer. I think it's because I'm challenged by it. I think there is challenge. There are challenges, and I'm not sure what the answer is necessarily, but we definitely can't deny it exists.
Yeah, definitely. One thing you've been recognized for in your work has been your proactive approach to risk management. And I wonder if you can tell me a bit about what that means, or what that approach is, and what it means to you to be recognized in that way.
Risk management. I think trying something new is often counterintuitive to risk management, but innovation is sort of precisely what you need to manage the risk of change and modernization. So more of the same is risky behavior in a changing world. So, being recognized by Lexbird and Canadian Lawyer, those kinds of awards reinforce for me, and hopefully those who hear about them, that the practice of law and our approaches to solving problems can evolve and must evolve through change in order for our beloved legal institutions to survive and change and thrive. And so change is actually the key. And I think innovation, maybe is a subtext of that or euphemism for that, but it's something that we should embrace.
As someone who's in law school, I think I can say that working in-house is not kind of the most typical path for Allard students, or the kind of the default option. It's more of a sort of private practice oriented journey, I think, the way it's been laid out for us anyways. How would you say that working in-house differs from your experience in private practice? And why do you think it's working in-house is something that students should be considering?
Yeah, and I think it's even more than just in-house or private practice. I think that there are many different practices of law, and I think that's growing, which is great. I think it's a widening spectrum, and we need lawyers in all types of practice. In private practice, sometimes you lose out on the wider enterprise role. You're tasked with a specific legal problem to solve or a transaction to close. And as a private practice lawyer, you don't have that ongoing influence on the direction or culture of a business or a nonprofit or a department or whatever you work at. In-house lawyers have the luxury of knowing their client deeply and serving business roles in addition to legal roles. And as private practice lawyers, you're bound, duty bound, to serve legal roles and not give business advice, only give legal advice. So as an in-house lawyer, when your time isn't metered on the clock for billing purposes and billing targets, the importance of your work is tempered with the outcome that affects of the people you work with and for the enterprise rather than the billable tasks. So more often than not, interpersonal outcomes are more memorable and meaningful than a perfected drafted purchase sale agreement. And I think it's in-house counsel, you have that luxury and opportunity to enjoy that part of the practice of law. And so I would encourage everyone and students like yourself to think outside the box of private practice, and that I think that the delivery of legal services is changing, and I think there's great opportunity to get off the clock.
Interesting. You earned your LLM at Allard in 2007, and as you were telling me before, apparently this kind of path has been part of your plan for a long time. But I wonder what motivated you to go back to school, and why specifically UBC?
To put it contrarily, I think it's the love of the law. I really do love the law, and it made me want to study law further. I think an LLM is a gratifying way to deliciously dive into an area of interest, and you get to debate it amongst colleagues that are versed in legal theory right at campus here at UBC or across the country or sometimes across the world. And you get to truly satisfy yourself that you've learned something about the law that you can appreciate in other legal and other non-legal contexts. For example, my LLM thesis was a study on the highway project that was intended to bisect Vancouver's Chinatown in the late 60s. As an expropriation lawyer, I twinned many highways through Alberta, and I could appreciate the urban planning ambitions to support a car-centered economy. But also, as a Chinese Canadian woman, I learned how urban planning laws here in Vancouver, as and they were fought valiantly elsewhere as well, how those urban planning laws articulate and dictate a racialized history and a racialized hierarchy. Resistance and complicity against planning laws created racialized identities through space. And I had a wonderful opportunity to delve into that under my supervisor, Professor Doug Harris. And in that way, I think the LLM is an incredible opportunity. It allowed me to learn a lot about the law, and which I love, and urban planning and intersecting disciplines. I think that if you love the law, an LLM at UBC is the place to do it. You get to rub elbows with the brightest legal minds, and the weather's not bad either. Scholars from around the world vie to come here to UBC, and I think it creates an inspiring environment. You get cutting-edge thinking and academic vigor. And if any time you have any interest in the area of law that you read up on, I mean, consider doing an LLM in it. It's something that if you can take time away from your career or during your career to do, I highly recommend it. Practically speaking, it gave me the academic vigor and the skills and knowledge to teach law now a little more confidently.
You've remained involved with the school as an adjunct professor, and you've been involved in teaching and supervising students as part of the business law clinic. Could you tell me a bit about how you got involved with the clinic and why you felt it was important to take part?
I wanted to teach because I wanted to give back to the legal profession. I'd reached that vintage in my career, and I enjoy teaching during my LLM as a teaching assistant. And I was waiting for the opportunity to combine my practical experience as a corporate lawyer with my pedagogical insights into experiential teaching. And I think the Business Law Clinic was the perfect opportunity. It was a seminar class where students took on real clients and to give business advice. And it's very similar to law school assistance programs that help low-income clients with criminal charges or landlord and tenant issues. The Business Law Clinic would provide legal advice to small business owners like chiropractors or yoga studios or landscaping companies that otherwise would typically find the cost of legal services from lawyers to be prohibitive. And this gave small businesses access to commercial legal advice. And it provided students with a supported learning environment in client relationships. And I was lucky to be involved at the inception of the clinic. I got to design my own curriculum and the lesson plans. The workload was crushing and overwhelming. There was countless hours, but the rewards were immensely tenfold back. I think that, you know, they gave me a job, but I feel like they gave me an opportunity. And I wanted to give back, and I think I definitely was the one rewarded.
Yeah. Could you describe a bit more specifically what it is that you teach and what you think students gain from taking your seminars?
I currently teach the Corporate Solicitors Workshop. This is a lovely course too, much like the Business Law Clinic. This workshop allows students to learn corporate solicitor skills in an in-depth seminar. They learn about the ways in which companies operate and transact, and not only what documents need to be drafted, but how transactions are planned, having regard to a client's business needs and compliance with the law. So it's marrying people with how the laws are going to impact them. And I enjoy teaching it because I can share my experiences and insights as a Chinese Canadian woman practicing in corporate law and having both experience privately and in-house. Somehow I think my very physical presence is a leadership example, and that there are many paths to excellence. And I think I try to teach students that there is a responsibility in the law, and that is you have a responsibility to keep learning it and you have a responsibility to teach it. So my hope that is that students somehow connect legal compliance and how that activates in the context of business relationships. And up until the COVID pandemic, you know, these business relationships occurred in an increasingly globalized world. I don't think we've departed from that. I think we're taking a pause and maybe have to reorient some of that. But I think the lesson that I hope students learn is that law doesn't stand on its own, that it's very contextualized. Even in areas like corporate solicitors work, I think that the language of contextualized law is often understood in rights-based advocacy or poverty law issues. And I think that that doesn't embrace what the law actually does fully in our society, which is that it's integrated in all our lives, in corporate transactions as well. So I hope students get some of that and learn how to plan a transaction as well.
As someone who's remained involved, who's made a point of remaining involved with legal education, I'm curious as to what changes you've seen in the way that the law is taught since, say, you were a student, and also where you think legal education should go next.
Well, I went to law school almost 20 years ago at University of Calgary. I am pleased to see that legal education has diversified to address different learning styles, different learning student profiles, and delivering learning opportunities for a greater number of students. I think that's really important too. We see increased course offerings, experiential learning, clinics like the one I teach, increased student exchanges, increased moot competitions, inter-school symposiums. I think all that is, you know, plus the basics that of course exist, are positives in the way legal education has progressed. I think as to where it will go next, I hope legal education will feature learning outside the classroom more, and that legal education can do a little something to create future legal educators.
I know that you're also known for your philanthropic work, including with the Pacific Postpartum Support Society. Could you tell me a bit about that organization and your role within it?
Because I had postpartum depression when I had my son, I wanted to give back to the resource organization that really helped me during my time of need. So years later, together with my neighbors and local business owners, the Burdicks, they live across the street, we founded the Angel Donors Dinner. And we held five of these angel donors dinners, inviting donors and health professional supporters to fundraise, I think, over $350,000 for that organization. That's a grassroots charity organization that has helped mothers and families since the 70s, and have done so through the hearts and spirits of volunteers, basically. And a few years ago, I don't know if you remember, a local Vancouver woman, local Vancouver mother, took her own life as she suffered with postpartum depression. And I think it's a sober reminder that motherhood is a community asset. And we sometimes take that for granted. And we have to value the roles of families and mothers. And I was glad to have the opportunity to be helped by the organization. And I was glad for the opportunity to help them.
My last question to you is, I hope it's not too broad of a question, but I think a really important part of law school, in addition to the academics and doing well and all that, is mentorship opportunities and the people you meet who've navigated this journey with success, and hearing what they have to say about how to do so. So I wonder, we talked a little bit about why in-house, for example, is a type of practice that students should consider. But I wonder more generally, what advice you have for law students who are making their way through school and into the profession?
That's a broad question. But I think learn as much law as possible. You've gone to law school because it's something you really enjoy. You've become a lawyer because there's something in it that you quite enjoy. And I think it's the love of the law. So learn as much about it as possible. Keep reading, keep learning in areas that you don't practice in or are particularly interested in. It's amazing how the concepts or ideas or that analysis and legal creativity cross disciplines and cross practice areas. You might stumble upon that issue or curiosity in the law that kind of keeps your career alive. You know, it's the one thing that continues to inspire you when, if you're in private practice, maybe the billable hours become crushing, or you're in-house and the numerous demands become too stretched by them. It's the kernel of love of the law that I think keeps me returning to it, and I think will keep students and practitioners returning to law. The vigor it demands of our analysis. I mean, the law, I mean, it's very diverse, but it demands a vigorous analysis in our thinking, critical thinking, and it has the force of wide impacts and the energy it gives to the legacies of democracy and freedom and what we think about community. I think that if you keep at it, keep learning the law and loving the law, that'll be the thread that pulls you through whatever career path you take. Much like myself, I've gone through, you know, private practice as a litigator, as a solicitor, in-house, you know, teaching and adjudicating, all those things is because I love the law and I keep wanting to learn more about it.
You mentioned at the very beginning that you're someone who likes to always have a plan. I wonder if there are any roles or projects coming up in your future that you're excited about and would like to share.
Well, in January this year, I was appointed to the hearing panel pool for the Law Society's credentials and disciplinary panels. So I've sat on one review panel to date, and I'm writing and rewriting the decisions. So I'm learning a lot about that. And I'm really enjoying the adjudicating opportunity immensely. It's something I've never quite done. We make decisions in our lives all the time, but deciding on, you know, matters of law that affect another lawyer's, you know, potential to practice in this area that I love and in this profession that I love, it's a great responsibility, and it's filled with interesting, legal issues, like from administrative law to social impacts to, you know, even factual discovery of a particular, citation. I'm intrigued by how decisions are made within the panel as well, and how the diversity and background of panel members functions in the deliberations. And I can see how legal and non-legal perspectives of the members are important to good decisions. And I think that gave me a great insight, and I think it's important. I can also see how threads of legal adjudication is informed and cast by the idea of precedent and the tenets of evidence. And perhaps with more experience, I can develop some insights on how to untangle some of those knots. The knots that sort of tend to tie up disproportionately certain groups of lawyers or types of lawyers. And so hopefully I'm drawn to the voluntary work as a way to give back to the profession, which has given me so much. And I think, much like teaching, it's going to give me so much more back in what I'm going to learn about from it.
Sometimes there are questions that interviewees wish interviewers had asked them. Was there anything at all you wanted to add that you feel would be valuable to the project?
You know, I thought long and hard about it because I was quite humbled to be asked to participate in this project. You know, at first I was like, I don't think I have anything to offer. You know, I've just been, you know, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I teach a little and I work. You know, there's nothing special about my journey. And I think that there's two thoughts to that. One is everyone's journey has some special bits that can help others. So hopefully there are bits in my journey that others can take from. But I also think maybe the journeys don't have to be that special. I don't think that the only people, hopefully, you know, that you're not, I like the fact that you're not just interviewing the superstars, you're interviewing folks like myself that are just love the law and practice law and have enjoyed it as part of a career that's really enriched my life. And, you know, I'm not, I think I'm just a regular person in that sense. I'm a regular lawyer that has had a passion for the law. And so I'm glad to participate in the project. I think one of the voices that I hope to represent is that the law doesn't have to be just superstars of private practice or judges or celebrities, and that a humble, enjoyed practice of law is a companion for life, so to speak.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for taking the time to be part of the project. It's been a privilege.
Great, thank you.